After the International Space Station retires, what comes next? You're listening to Are We There Yet? The radio show exploring space exploration. Hi, I'm Brendan Byrne. After almost three decades of science research and exploration, the International Space Station is set to retire by the end of 2030. But once the station is decommissioned, what will replace it? We'll speak with ISS's Robin Gatens about the future of the station and how commercial companies will play a key part in the future. Then one of those commercial companies working towards the future of science in low Earth orbit is Axiom Space. The company plans to start launching parts of its modular space station in 2027. We'll speak with Axiom's George Motter about the plan to continue science and research in low Earth orbit. That's ahead on Are We There Yet? The first long-duration crew arrived at the International Space Station in the year 2000, and since then has had over 250 people visit the orbiting lab, with that number continuing to grow as missions continue to launch to the station. But in 2030, NASA and its international partners plan to retire the station. So what will replace the ISS, and what legacy will it leave behind? Here to talk about the future of low Earth orbit and research is Robin Gatens, the director of the International Space Station and acting director for the Commercial Spaceflight Division. Robin, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Great to have you. We're going to talk about the future of low Earth orbit and its importance and NASA's path forward there. But before we get to that, I want to talk about a low Earth orbit platform that has been in space for more than two decades, the International Space Station. Robin, let's start our conversation talking a bit about the significance of the International Space Station as an orbital platform for science.
Yeah, it's, as you said, the International Space Station is now in its third decade. We've been continuously crewed now for over 24 years, which is a pretty incredible feat in and of itself. But the mission of the International Space Station is manifold. As you noted, it's a scientific platform. We're doing all kinds of science to return benefits to humanity and life here on Earth, as well as get NASA ready to explore beyond low Earth orbit. So things like testing technologies and studying how humans live and work in space for long periods of time. It's a international collaboration among five space agencies, and we've had a number of other countries participate. We're up to 117 different countries that have done some sort of activity on the International Space Station, whether it be an educational project or research or flown an astronaut. And then we interact with a lot of students. So there's a big inspirational piece to the International Space Station for both students and the general public. And then finally, we are literally using the station to bring industry along and create a low Earth orbit economy, if you will, and all kinds of commercial capabilities.
All good things must come to an end, right? The International Space Station is nearing the end of its life. What will come next?
We are planning for that future. So first of all, we're not done yet. We're trying to get everything we can out of the International Space Station this decade. In fact, we're in what we like to think of as the golden era, or the decade of results. Many incredible scientific and technology results still coming out of station, and we'll continue to do that through 2030. And after that, we're preparing to transition to commercially owned and operated space stations. We're calling these commercial low Earth orbit destinations. So we've already enabled commercial transportation capabilities. We have companies like SpaceX and Northrop Grumman and soon Sierra Space providing transportation to the International Space Station and bringing up science. So we've got transportation. Now we need the destinations, and we're going to follow sort of the same model and have commercial companies build those. And NASA will become one of many customers of those space stations to continue our work in low Earth orbit.
You mentioned some of the things that you're utilizing, the commercial operators with transportation. Can you tell me a bit about how this commercialization of space, from cargo missions that have happened to human transports, which started in 2020, how that is really kind of the foundation of the future of NASA's plans for the future of low Earth orbit? In other words, how has what you learned led you to come up with this plan?
NASA's philosophy has always been to go do the hard things, right, that that industry is maybe not ready or doesn't have the resources to do on their own. And that's really the role of the government. So we bring industry along with us in those endeavors. And then when they're ready, we let industry take over and we let them do those things and buy those things as a service. And then we go on and do the next hard thing. So that's what we're doing here, first with transportation and now the platform itself, the destination, and really all of low Earth orbit. And then we'll continue to go on to the moon and Mars and bring industry along with us in those endeavors as well.
And obviously it's working with commercial cargo and commercial crew, you know, but when it comes to this commercialization of low Earth orbit and with NASA moving on, you know, these companies need some sort of financial incentive to do this work. Is there enough future in the low Earth economy to bring these companies on board?
We think so. We definitely see the promise in that. Now, we know initially NASA and our other international partner space agencies and other governments will be the primary customers of these platforms, but we are starting to really see other commercial business-to-business relationships emerge. We're trying to enable those markets using the International Space Station today, things like testing medical advances or novel materials. And so we're helping to incubate those future applications that then could take off and fuel this economy as well. So we think the future's bright. We think there will definitely be enough business to support one or more and hopefully many platforms.
As we move towards that, you know, as you mentioned, NASA's got this plan. It's got this low Earth orbit microgravity strategy. You're thinking about getting as much as you can out of the International Space Station this decade before it's retired. Are commercial companies moving at the pace that you would like them to be at so that there is no gap in access to low Earth orbit to NASA and the science here? Or is that a concern still that they may not be moving as quickly as you'd like?
Well, anytime you build a new platform or vehicle, it takes a while. But the companies are moving out. We are in what we are calling phase one of that process right now, where we are have a number of agreements with these companies to help them in their developing their concepts and providing financial assistance and expertise. And then we're getting ready to issue a request for proposals for phase two of next phase of this plan, which will be to get actual proposals from companies, full and open competition. It's not a down select among those who are currently have agreements with NASA, but full new competition where companies will submit full proposals to NASA and we will review those and select sometime next year. And with the idea of having the initial on-orbit capability of one or more of these commercial space stations by the end of the decade.
Robin, one of these goals of the low Earth orbit microgravity strategy is to prioritize NASA science and technology payloads. I see that these new commercial platforms being an opportunity to get NASA science up there, but will there also be an opportunity to get NASA astronauts up there? I mean, the International Space Station is continually staffed by professional astronauts. Every now and then, they'll get a civilian visitor. But with this new platform, will it be the opposite? Will it be the NASA astronauts visiting these commercial space stations less frequently than they would the International Space Station?
Our plan and what we've signaled so far to industry is we intend to fly two crew continuously to these platforms. So about half the crew are flying to the International Space Station today. But then we anticipate our international partners also to want to continue to fly. In fact, we know they want to continue to fly in low Earth orbit. And then there'll be new countries who want to fly potentially astronauts as well as private astronauts flying to these space stations. So NASA will be definitely our goal is to continue missions to these commercial platforms along with our international partners. And continue to hone those skills and so that we're ready to do missions beyond low Earth orbit.
And I would assume this would give more opportunity for non-astronauts to get to space, right? Will we see the commercial astronaut career begin to take off? And how do I apply for that?
Yeah, in fact, we're already enabling that today on the International Space Station through our private astronaut mission. We've enabled a mechanism where private companies can apply to fly a mission to the space station. So far, we've flown three of those, and we're getting ready to do a fourth. And those consist of astronauts from other countries, but also private citizens. So for a price, yes, you can also fly to space.
we'll see if we can get the podcast to fund that. That would be great. Robin, as you're thinking to the future of this, you know, NASA's got this plan laid out, but what potential challenges are on the horizon? Is there something that's particularly keeping you up at night that you're worried about as we move into this next chapter of low Earth orbit exploration?
Yeah, there are a number of challenges. Budget's always one, of course. In order for us to transition from the International Space Station to commercial LEO destinations without having a gap in low Earth orbit, we actually have to have plan for an overlap. And so we have to have an overlap between International Space Station operations and operations on these commercial platforms. And so anytime you have an overlap, you have a budget hump. So that's one of our challenges. The timing of that, we want to deorbit space station on plan by 2030. We really need the platforms to be there by then. And they will be new vehicles. So there are a number of challenges that we see ahead of us, but we think we have a plan that we can get there.
Let's end the conversation by going back to the beginning. We mentioned the International Space Station is set to be retired by the end of the decade. Maybe you can soothe my grieving heart here when I think about that. But is the future bright in low Earth orbit, even though the International Space Station will one day be no more?
Absolutely. Don't fear. Yes, I've worked on the International Space Station my whole career. So yes, it is bittersweet to think about one day deorbiting it and all that it has stood for and all the work that has been and science that has been conducted there. But I'm excited about the new platforms and all that they will have to offer. And I'm excited about continuing our work in low Earth orbit. It really is and will continue to be part of our NASA's exploration mission. We need low Earth orbit to continue to conduct science, to continue to do the research on the human body and to continue to test technologies so that we're ready to go into deep space.
Robin, I am ready for that next chapter now. Thank you so much for putting me at ease, and thank you so much for your insight on the future of low Earth exploration. Thanks, Robin.
Thank you so much.
That was Robin Gatens, the director of the International Space Station and acting director for the Commercial Spaceflight Division. Still to come, how one commercial company is building the next space station.
Our goal is to provide that continuous human science presence in orbit, in low Earth orbit, for not only NASA and the international partners, but for new partners that we're bringing to the table.
A look into Axiom Space and its station plans. That's ahead on Are We There Yet? You're listening to Are We There Yet? I'm Brendan Byrne. Where did we come from? That's the timeless question astronomers and scientists ask as they study our galaxy, and a research team at the University of Central Florida made a discovery that could help explain how our solar system formed. The team used the James Webb Space Telescope to study a centaur, a small celestial body between Jupiter and Neptune that orbits the Sun. But this specific centaur has a surprising composition, one that could help answer how our planet came to be. Hear more about that unique centaur next week on Are We There Yet? But for now, aerospace companies are working to develop commercial space stations to replace the International Space Station when it retires in 2030. One of those companies is Axiom Space. But instead of launching a station in 2030, the company plans to launch modules starting in 2027, with those plans beginning on the ISS. Axiom plans to launch several modules that will help transition low Earth orbit exploration into a more habitable experience for crewed missions in the future. Here to talk about the company's plans is George Motter, the Senior Vice President and Chief Engineer at Axiom Space. George, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, George, we know that the International Space Station is set to retire at the end of the decade. NASA is relying on commercial companies to fill that gap. One of those companies is yours, Axiom Space. Let's talk about your company's plan to fill the gap in low Earth orbit. What are you putting up there?
Well, NASA selected Axiom Space in 2020 as a commercial provider to attach to the International Space Station. We're the first and only to be able to do that. And so our original plan was to build Axiom Station on the side of the International Space Station, in a sense, building up four modules. And we were then to depart in 2030 when the space station goes into its end of life.
So you're going to have parts that attach to the International Space Station, then separate and then become free flying. And I'm assuming building on that, what is the end Axiom Station going to look like in comparison to the International Space Station?
Well, Axiom is really interested in building, we're using a modular approach, basically having modules that have certain personalities in a sense. So we have habitat modules, we have payload modules, we have modules that will provide storage and power and thermal rejection. And so really, in a sense, we're building the infrastructure for a city in space. We want to be able to provide the ability to continue to grow the space station, start off small, and then keep growing. The International Space Station, built up to a certain size, and then it became an operational space station. But we see the commercial market and the ability to build, in a sense, a city in space and to develop these capabilities as the market grows.
So I'm assuming once you get up there, you can add different modules based on the needs of the industry. Follow-up question, could we put a podcasting module up there, and do you need someone to help you with that?
I think we certainly could.
Okay. I'm happy to do it.
The infrastructure would be pretty easy. We're going to have very high-speed internet, lots of power, and the capability, and so you can certainly look out the window and have some pretty incredible podcasts.
All right, sounds good. Send me up there, George. I'll be the first to volunteer. Let's talk a bit about the plan to actually get this into orbit. You mentioned Axiom was given the contract by NASA to attach to the International Space Station. What module is that going to be, and what do you need to learn from that first module that's attached to the ISS?
Sure. Well, originally, we were going to put four modules, the first one being the habitat module. Believe it or not, the ISS only has, in a sense, seven bedrooms. And so when other astronauts come to visit the ISS, for instance, the PAM missions or the private astronaut missions that Axiom Space has been flying, they have to kind of find places to sleep. They don't have crew quarters. So our first module was going to be for crew. And then we were going to send up another habitat module, payloads, and integration, basically a manufacturing module and an Earth observation. And then the final module was going to be all the power and thermal that we needed to depart station and act as an operational space station. Well, part of ISS end of life planning, I don't know if you're aware, but they just awarded the deorbit vehicle. And this is a vehicle that'll be pushing the ISS in a sense into it's a safe reentry trajectory. NASA's looking to at 2030 at end of life, which will require them to start that preparation in 2028. We were supposed to depart in 2030. And so because they're going to start their preparations in 2028, we looked at different options. NASA requested that we kind of look at our development plan and see if there's a way that we could, in a sense, build earlier and depart. And so what we've done is our new plan is a two-module sequence. We're going to be sending up the payloads, power, and thermal module as our first module to the space station. This will be in 2027. This allows us to have a significant capacity to provide science and the ability to, in a sense, save the science from the ISS or transfer payloads, scientific inquiry and, you know, scientific projects, and also any hardware that NASA doesn't need anymore and that there's value still in. And then we can take that hardware, depart from the space station, and then join up with that habitat module as our second module. And then we will be a two-module free-flying space station.
That makes so much sense because it is so expensive to get that science and hardware up to the station. This essentially gives it a second chance at life in orbit, right?
That's correct. We're dedicating this module really to, as I said, payloads, power, and thermal. If you think about it, a space station is really it's self-contained ecosystem. And to build a city, we need all those municipal infrastructure kinds of things. We need power plants, and we need the ability for us, we need to get, you know, heat at night, cool during the day. And also we need that capacity for all the science and all the incredible discoveries that they've made on the ISS. Our goal is to provide that continuous human science presence in orbit, in low Earth orbit, for not only NASA and the international partners, but for new partners that we're bringing to the table.
How does that first module get to the International Space Station, George?
We'll be launching the PPTM in 2027. And basically, it is a fully contained spacecraft. It has the ability to navigate, has propulsion, has power and thermal, and all the things it needs, in a sense, to fly to the space station. It'll be berthed to the space station. Now, the difference is that some spacecraft dock and some spacecraft berth. The difference is the docking port is automatic, like the new Crew Dragon and Cargo Dragon that actually docks with the space station. We will be berthing. And the difference is the robotic arm will capture us. It'll bring us to a berthing port. And then we'll, in a sense, bolt into the space station. The magic here is this gives us a 50-inch of the full-size hatch of the space station and allows us to be able to take full racks of equipment from the ISS, put them into our PPTM, and allow us to then to take the science. And so by berthing instead of docking, we get a much bigger hatch, and that allows us to move all of that equipment over between ISS and our module.
I imagine it's like a moving company at this point, just backing up a U-Haul to the ISS, right? You know, you mentioned this earlier in the conversation, George, about how you have your private astronauts that have been up there. There have been multiple crew that have gone there, led by former NASA astronauts that have lived and worked on the International Space Station. How is this experience of having former ISS astronauts and private astronauts going to the International Space Station, having these missions, planning for these missions, how is it helping you prepare for the future of a commercial low Earth orbit platform?
It's really amazing. We have the ability to take experienced, you know, NASA astronauts who've spent a career, you know, in space, and to assist not only Axiom, but our new two space agencies that we're working with, and provide them the training and the mentorship and the guidance. So really, in a sense, we're transferring the hardware, you know, from a national asset to a commercial asset, but we're also transferring all of that incredible experience from the astronaut side, how to live and work in space, and to be able to transfer that to our new commercial astronauts, our new nations that are providing astronauts. And so it's pretty incredible. And in a sense, they're both mentors and guides and help in training. But this allows us to really do incredible things. As you mentioned, we've flown three AX missions. These are private astronaut missions, but private is only about, it's a private company flying these missions. These aren't private astronauts. It's a real combination. In fact, we've flown astronauts from Poland, Hungary, India, Sweden, Italy, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Israel, Canada, and we've got a fourth mission coming up here in the spring, which will fly an astronaut from India and Hungary and from Poland, which is part of ESA.
I'm reading a headline about Axiom Space Station that was on space.com. Axiom's private space station is coming sooner than we thought. I've been covering space for a decade. Nothing happens sooner than we thought. How did you manage to expedite this? Or what do you credit the pace at which Axiom Station is coming online, and also the pace at which Axiom Space has seemed to have just taken over the commercial space sector.
Axiom is a great combination of folks, you know, vertical integration, building our own hardware. We're building a significant amount of hardware in-house, as many of the sort of new space companies do. We're using some folks that have done this before for some of the hardware, which we felt that we couldn't bring that technology to maturity fast enough. And so it's part of that combination. The other thing that's speeding it up, once again, instead of being a free flyer in four modules, we're now a free flyer in two modules. So that accelerates us. And the way we did that is the PPTM, instead of just a payloads module and a power and thermal module, we've combined the two to be able to provide, in a sense, that infrastructure that we need. And then we add the habitat module, which is a little bit more power and a little bit more thermal, and we combine them together into a fully functional two-module free-flying space station in 2028.
And finally, George, you know, how long do you imagine that Axiom station will be on orbit? Is there a planned life for it? Is there enough interest in the commercial sector to utilize it for the decades that the International Space Station has been used? I mean, where do you see the future of this going?
See, that's part of the advantage of building a modular space station. It's also an advantage that because we're building, you know, these modules to interconnect together, they also have their own propulsion systems and they have their own guidance systems, because in a sense, they'll fly up and mate with the other modules that are in flight. This allows us to fly them away. And so the idea here is, as we build the station, we bring up newer and newer modules, and we may find that there might be a module that we don't need anymore, and it can fly off and dispose of itself safely by reentry into the Pacific Ocean, into Point Nemo, as they say. By doing that, we can continually regenerate Axiom Station and be able to sort of make it what we need it to be, not only now, but in the future.
But you'll keep my podcast module up there for a bit?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. George Motter is currently Senior Vice President and Chief Engineer of Axiom Station. Thank you, George.
You're very welcome.
That's going to do it for this week's show. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe to the show's podcast feed so you never miss an episode. Do that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the NPR app, YouTube, really wherever you get your podcasts. Stay connected with the show. Follow us on social media. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook. That's AWTY space. And if you got an idea for a future episode of the show, or you want to join us as a guest, reach out. You can contact us at arewetheryet@cfpublic.org. More space coverage online, visit cfpublic.org/space. Are We There Yet is a production of Central Florida Public Media. Our producer is Marion Summerall. Our intern is Allison Castillo. Editorial guidance from Latoya Dennis. Support for Are We There Yet comes from our listeners. Until next week, I'm Brendan Byrne. Thanks for listening.